Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, September 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next, we'll see how long we go, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for what I like to call our Thursday meeting show. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com, Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Two excellent professional handicappers joining us. We're going to talk all football today, college and NFL, with both of our guests. Definitely want to make sure that we get some NFL stuff here on the show. And of course, we'll get some more NFL stuff on the show tomorrow during our Westgate Super Contest selection segment with Sports Cheetah. I'm doing our Super Contest entry for BangTheBook.com on my own. We actually have two of them. We've got BangTheBook.com, which belongs to my boss, Bang the Book Podcast, which is mine. So lots of things to talk about with regards to the Super Contest tomorrow. And we'll also get Brent from DSI Sportsbook on the show with the odds report. But today, really looking forward to this program. Had a lot of good stuff to talk about on yesterday's show. I know yesterday's show ran about an hour and 45 minutes. We will not go that long here today. But again, I mean, when you talk early season football, college and the NFL, there's just so much to cover, so many overreactions, all that type of thing. Want to make sure that we try to cover as wide of a range of games and teams as we possibly can. Before I bring Brad on the show, a couple of things I want to mention. I mentioned this yesterday. I know we had a little bit of an issue with people getting signed up, but the BTB Super Contest over at BangTheBook.com will start here for this weekend. Pick five games against the spread. Numbers are out there. Your picks have to be in by Sunday when the first game kicks off. $1,000 cash prize for first place, $750 for second, $500 for third. Prizes quarterly, so weeks 1 through 4, 5 through 8, etc. But you can sign up over there at bangthebook.com. You just have to create an account with your email address. We'll send you a newsletter pretty much every day with some of the latest content that we have over at the website. Not going to spam your email inbox or anything like that. Just want to make sure that we get eyes in front of our content, and then you get the chance to be part of the Super Contest. No purchase necessary, no entry fee to join that. Just head on over to bangthebook.com and check that out. Then also, of course, as we head into a very, very busy football weekend, you want to make sure that you have as many outs as possible. Those points and those half points, particularly on the NFL side, very, very important. You can shop around for props, shop around for futures, all that type of thing. If you don't have an account over at DSI Sportsbook, they are offering a phenomenal promo code, best in the business right now as far as I'm concerned. You sign up using the code BTB and the number 25, no space. You'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up, an additional 100% deposit bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit bonus for the live casino if you decide to play over there. So basically a 200% deposit bonus plus a $25 free bet, low rollover. How can you beat that? So over there at DSI, you can take advantage of that promo code offer for our BangTheBook.com readers and Bang the Book radio listeners. So that will bring on today's first guest. That is Mr. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, my friend?
It's going well. Good to hear your voice on this fine Thursday morning.
Well, we might as well get this out of the way first. You owe me a pitcher of beer, my friend.
Yeah, what a bad bet. I, you know, go on the show and give out UCLA. You question it, say you're really on Texas A&M. So a horrible handicap on my part. You know, at least I got the quarterback right. That was my main part. I just thought UCLA had a huge quarterback edge, but I guess I failed to think, you know, consider UCLA's rush defense against that Texas A&M rush offense. Although I will say the handicapper in me is very disappointed. I lost one of my top picks of the week, but the better Brad Powers is happy because I believe I gave it out on the show -3, -3.5, and that baby closed at what, 6.5. So the better in me is always going to say, hey, if I can get ahead of a closing line by 3, 3.5 points, more often than not, I'll win. But what an ugly performance by UCLA in the first half, and equally as horrible by Texas A&M in the last 20 minutes of the game.
I'll tell you what, man, since I wound up with such a bad number on that bet, it might have to be two pitchers of beer just to rub it in a little bit more that you got a good number. I had a terrible number in that game, at least with the purposes of the show. I waited until game day to go ahead and take that number because I did figure it would go up. So at least I got a personal better number, but I don't know, man. It might be two pitchers of beer. Then again, I mean, over at O'Shea's, and anything could happen, and we may wind up just staying there all night and just kind of like falling asleep in the craps table or something. So, you know, who knows? We'll see how it goes next time I'm out there. All right, lots of stuff to get to here on today's segment. Week 1 to week 2 overreactions and adjustments have been a theme that we've talked about here on the two shows that we've had thus far. Want to touch on that with you as well. And I want to speak about Maryland, because you and I were talking before we came on the show. We were talking about we were actually laughing about yesterday's last point on the show about Jim Mora being the coach of the week, which was ridiculous. But you mentioned DJ Durkin as a guy that should have been in the running and possibly should have won it, the head coach at Maryland. Impressive performance for Maryland, kind of a wet blanket thrown on it because Tyrell Pigram, who played so well in that game, got hurt. It was an interesting situation for you with Maryland, though, as you were updating your power ratings.
Yeah, I mean, for starters, I thought he definitely deserved an 18.5-point underdog, and I thought there was a better team pretty much from start to finish in that game. It wasn't fluky. It's not like Texas had 5 or 6 turnovers and they capitalized on it. Maryland, I mean, athlete for athlete was right there too, and you got to give the head coach who's done a great job of recruiting his last couple classes. And another thing, as far as Maryland's powering, now how would I treat, you know, under normal circumstances, a team wins outright, covers the spread by about 4 touchdowns. You know, early in the season, I might be more aggressive with that power rating. Instead of moving it a couple points up, maybe I move it 4 or 5 points up, because that's the only data point that we have for that particular team for the season. The problem is, you know, Maryland in the fourth quarter lost their starting quarterback. So that had me only upgrading them a couple points. Now, give credit to Hill, who's a very talented kid. He's 6'2", 230, and he led it. With all the pressure on, Texas coming back in that game, they're only down – Texas was only down 3. You know, Hill leads them to a couple of fourth-quarter touchdowns on ice. So, you know, it wasn't a significant downgrade with Pigram being out for the year. But, you know, normally I probably would have upgraded Maryland 4 or 5 points, only upgraded them a couple points, took a couple points down for the quarterback injury.
All right, so this is interesting because we have Sports Cheat on the show, somebody that you're very familiar with. And of course, you know, you guys do cross paths fairly often. And one of the biggest things that he adjusts based on in his power ratings is the closing number. You know, he'll look and see how far off he was from where the number went, and then he'll make his adjustments that way. Is that only a factor for you? Or are you looking more at performance and how the team's actually played?
Oh, no. And there's a reason why Cheat is one of the best in the business. And I would argue that, you know, if there's one peer here when it comes to college football, I probably respect his opinion just about as much as anyone here in Vegas when it comes to college football. No, I want to know who's taking money. Particularly, I want to know who's taking money against my lines. Since I put out everything in the offseason, I put out my power rings, I put out my early picks, I put out my early tickets. I just show the market what I'm betting. If I have lines moving against my power rating numbers and not tailing it and steaming with it, I want to know why. So, absolutely, it's not the overall factor, because I still want to see performance and how the team, you know, came out and played, you know, relative to my expectations. But I also want to understand the market and definitely if the market went against me. So, no, that's about 50% of my evaluation, at least early on in the season.
So let me ask you this, because you come from more of a handicapping background. You know, we've talked about this before, that you worked for North Coast and worked alongside Phil Steele. So you know how to handicap games, you know how to handicap position groups and all that type of thing. Is adjusting your power ratings to the closing number something that you've just picked up recently, or is that something that you've been doing, you know, all along? Because to me, that sort of feels like more of a better concept than a handicapper concept.
Nope, only something that I've been doing probably since I moved to Vegas, and really didn't start doing it until the end of last season as it became more and more of a prominent better here. Fully well aware of that this season, and probably didn't adjust, you know, my power ratings. I used to get real aggressive with power ratings changes. In fact, you know, I'll pull it, you know, a little behind the curtain at Phil Steele. You know, even from a week-to-week basis, they'll move teams 4 or 5 points. I think that's a little too significant. I usually don't move a team that much, particularly when it's later in the season. We have a multitude of data points. So, I don't over-adjust, under-adjust. I try to be careful. And also, it makes me a little bit more conservative. My power rating change. Say a team performed really well, but the market was maybe against them a little bit. That would make me a little more cautious. So, it's something that I've added to my repertoire. And look, I still don't have all the answers, but I'm continuing to grind, and I'm continuing to learn. I learn something every single day, something new in this business.
And again, I mean, one of the important things there too is understanding the nature of a line move. You know, is it when you look at game day line moves, you look at how things are moving with a significant amount of money in the market, you know, obviously that holds a little bit more weight. That's a little bit more significant. the early league line moves are important too, but I think you got a situation here. Let's talk about a game, Miami of Ohio and Marshall, where Marshall won the game, but Miami of Ohio was very clearly the sharp side. That Red Hawks team took on significant money later in the week. That number went from Pick'em all the way up to Miami of Ohio -4 at a few shops out there. You know, they lost the game, but that was very, very clearly a sharp side. And, you know, I had that number sitting around Pick'em, and that's something that, you know, really stands out to me that, yeah, Marshall won, but that thing moved away from where I kind of expected it to go. And that's where you do need to make a little bit more of an aggressive adjustment.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty happy because I'm not happy I lost my ticket or my pick. I mean, I had one of the top plays on the week of Miami, Ohio. I actually gave them out Wednesday when they were +2, +2.5. So I even got in front of it there. And keep in mind, Miami, Ohio opened -8, -8.5 at South Point back on Memorial Day weekend. I totally understood the early move to Marshall. But I had the game maybe Miami, Ohio 1 or 2. I do think they're still legitimately one of the top teams in the MAC. As far as what I've done with my power ranks, I didn't touch the game. I clearly had Miami, Ohio as the favorite. Understood. Didn't understand why I went up to 4. Understood why they flipped the favorite. Definitely understood that. And, you know, that if I was really going off the game, I mean, obviously, I thought I had a right side loser. I mean, Marshall had a 99-yard kick return touchdown, 97-yard kick return touchdown, 75-yard interception return touchdown. I got ahead of the market. I thought I had a really good pick. I looked at the overall box score, and that might go down as one of my toughest losses of the season. To get ahead of a line move by 6.5 points, have the team outgain the other, and basically a pick'em type game by 150 yards and still lose, that was a tough pill to swallow. But I really didn't adjust the power ratings too much, to be honest with you, because I was expecting 3-4 points of line move after I gave it out at +2.5.
One more game I want to touch on here, and then we'll start to look ahead at some of these particular matchups for Week 1 and kind of carry over some of these same thoughts and sentiments. But the game I want to look at here is Vanderbilt, Middle Tennessee State. Now, I had this game a pick'em. It moved toward my number. It was Vanderbilt 4, then 3.5. Actually closed at 2.5, and it takes some significant involvement, some significant investment to push down through that key number of 3 to 2.5, and even some places showing 2 out there when the number closed. And Middle Tennessee State did not play well. Vanderbilt dominated that game. So how do you handle a situation like that, Brad, where I'm in a position where the line moved towards my number, but Vanderbilt was the far superior team? So what do you do in an instance like that?
Yeah, and I'm in the opposite boat on this one. So I'm glad you brought this one out. I was very strong on Vanderbilt. My power ranks had them like 7.5 or 8. The line moved against me, and I think a lot of it has to do with my Middle Tennessee power rating than anything, because they're a little bit. It's also a little off this week, 3 or 4 points in the Syracuse Middle Tennessee game. So I'm pinpointing where I'm off, and it's tough Week 1 to say, hey, is this pro money for the team, or is it the other team that's getting a lot of the money? And you can start to figure it out once Week 2, Week 3 hits. My power rating, I guess, on Middle Tennessee is too low, but. You know, sometimes I think the market gets a little too cute with some of these games. I mean, to me, I looked at last year's game. Now, the analytic guys are going to say, you know, Middle Tennessee outgained them by 150 yards, but I thought a lot of it was garbage yards, them throwing because they fell behind early. I thought Vanderbilt dominated the line of scrimmage in last year's game. I thought Vanderbilt is upgraded on both sides of the football this year. And, you know, look, players aren't stupid this time of year. They know if they're favored or not in a particular game, and I'm sure they were a little surprised to see that they're only a 3-point favorite. I thought it was – and, look, you can have your pure power rating number, and then you can start diving into the handicap and the matchup issues, and I just thought it was a bad matchup for Middle Tennessee. I thought they'd be able to get after Stock still a little bit, and I thought Vanderbilt offensively be able to run at will on Middle Tennessee's defense. So, to me, I – understand that the market was against me. I actually gave out a bad number when it's going down to 2.5. I mean, I was so strong on Vanderbilt, I gave them out at like 3.5, 3 as one of the top plays of the week. I won that one. I'm happy because it was a comfortable victory, but I'm a little worried that, you know, maybe I'm a little off on Middle Tennessee. But with that, but if that's the instance, though, you know, sometimes I'm okay being against the market. I can understand, hey, the money's against me, but this time of year, I mean, okay, the market's against me. I'm comfortable with my own power ratings. I'm comfortable that I've done just as much work as anybody this offseason. I mean, I started the college football prep back in March. I doubt many, much of the other markets started that early. So sometimes you got to understand it, but don't be afraid to take a position. If you really think you're not as high on a team, you know, don't be just adjusting power ratings blindly just because the market's against you.
All right, we got a wide variety of games to look at here. We've got some name brand teams and then some teams that kind of stood out a little bit from week one. Let's start with a matchup of those name brand teams, Oklahoma and Ohio State. Ohio State, 7.5-point favorite down in the horseshoe. I'd be really curious to see what this number would be if Ohio State's first half against Indiana had carried over to the second half against Indiana, but it didn't. The Buckeyes wound up covering, even though they were trailing at half, trailing in the third quarter, and they were a 20.5-point favorite there in that game. So, Brad, how are you seeing this one with Ohio State laying north of that key number?
Hey, I like the Buckeyes. Let's go back to last year's game. That game was around pick'em, and keep in mind at that time Ohio State was the least experienced team in the country, 6 returning starters. They were getting some money last year in the market, at least from the pro bettors. Obviously, they go in there, then they win by 3 touchdowns, dominating victory for them in Norman. Flip forward to this year, Ohio State, 15 returning starters, much more in better shape as far from experience level than what they were last year. Wasn't a good look in the first half. They corrected things. For them to be able to turn it on like a light switch like that and be able to get a cover as a 3 favorite on the road in a conference game shows you the upside that this team has. You know, Oklahoma, very inexperienced, at least skill position players. The Blitnikoff winner, D.D. Westbrook's gone. You look at the all-time leading rusher, and we're talking about a place that's known for their running backs in the history of college football. The all-time leading rusher for Oklahoma, Samaje Perine, gone. Joe Mixon, one of the most talented players in the country last year. The leading rusher for him, at least for last season, he's gone. So it's Baker Mayfield, and I'm worried about Baker Mayfield. He puts up great stats. He's the all-time leader in NCAA history as far as passing efficiency goes. But I look at 2 games where he faced elite defenses the last 2 years. Playoffs against Clemson, last year against Ohio State, when he's not going up against one of those Big 12 defenses that's average to below average. He's got 3 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and last year only completed 53% of his passes against Ohio State. That was the only game that he completed less than 60%. So I'm a little worried that it's going to be a lot more on the shoulders of Baker Mayfield in this game. You know, look, I'm not going to have a major bet here, but I'm leaning towards the Buckeyes. I also think you got a coaching obvious mismatch. Urban Meyer's got more national title rings than games that Lincoln Riley's actually been a head coach in. So I think it's going to be more the public side, but I'm going to take Ohio State minus the 7.5. I'm a little concerned with that pass defense, but I thought they tightened up, obviously, in the second half of that game against Indiana.
Yeah, it was, you know, and I got to watch all of that Ohio State game, and, you know, I wish I could watch more college football on Saturdays, but there's just so much stuff to try and watch. But the 2 things that really stood out to me about that game for Ohio State, the first is how they made adjustments defensively in the second half, and the second is how once they made those adjustments, that defensive line could not be stopped. And that is probably the best defensive line in the country right now, both on the interior and on the outsides. So for Oklahoma, like you just mentioned, you know, they're very inexperienced at the skill positions. Do they have guys that can get separation? It almost feels like what could happen to Oklahoma in this game is what happened to Ohio State in the first half of that game against Indiana, is that the Buckeyes couldn't get any separation from their wide receivers. JT Barrett, when he got separation, looked pretty bad. The difference is Ohio State had a running game to fall back on. I don't think Oklahoma has that same luxury. So there's not a whole lot of value in this number to me. I've got it line 7.5, and if you got in at 5.5 or 6, kudos to you for that. But I think that your handicap of the game is pretty on point.
Yeah, and boy, I wish I'd have had a 5.5 or 6. That was taken away quite early. And boy, I tell you, there's been some numbers posted early on and even early on this week that I just think are inexcusable. If I was running a casino and my sportsbook director is putting out a couple of these numbers, I guess I don't have any love lost. I mean, we would be having someone called up to the office and there'd be a stern talking to. I didn't understand how that could have even been posted, the Buckeyes under a touchdown.
All right, let's move to Georgia and Notre Dame. This is a game that you obviously know a lot about, and I know that you've already taken a position here on this game. But let's talk about it a little bit more here. Notre Dame, a 4.5-point favorite. First start for Fromm from Georgia. So, you know, again, I mean, we'll have to see how that goes because South Bend isn't exactly the kind of place where you want to have a kid making his first career start. But Georgia money coming in here early in the week, again, some of that move sort of pushing it from 6 into the 5, 4.5 range, not overly significant. But if this thing does go down below 4, that'll be something certainly worth noting.
Yeah, and another number didn't understand, Jacob. I mean, the number was sitting, you know, the look-aheads were sitting around 4. If you go back to the game of the year markets, here I was very happy because, you know, I'm sitting there in early July. South Point and Golden Nugget are releasing some games on the same day. South Point did not have this game in their first release on Memorial Day. But the same day that Golden Nugget opened their game, South Point did as well. I took a stance early. I just like the matchup for Georgia against Notre Dame. Their spring games were the same day. I watched them back-to-back, and I made a note. I circled Georgia in red lettering to take them in this game, and I got +3 at Golden Nugget. And within an hour, South Point opened Georgia -1, so I was pretty happy that I had a 4-point difference there. I mean, not overly significant, but enough to make me comfortable. Obviously, you know, Jacob Eason goes out, and, you know, I'm a little concerned, and a lot of the look-aheads, Notre Dame looks good, is 4, and then all of a sudden they announce Shane Fromm's a starter, and I get some 6.5s on Monday morning. That was a major mistake because as far as my power ratings go, how do I treat Jacob Eason to Jake Fromm? Obviously, there's got to be a downgrade, especially with a guy making his first career start at night in South Bend, major game. So that's a couple of points. But overall, athletic ability, I really didn't. I watched the spring game. I thought Fromm outperformed Jacob Eason in the game. You listen to everyone around the program, they say Fromm's got – you know, just an aura about him. He's got the moxie that Jacob Eason might have the better arm talent, but maybe the leadership qualities just aren't there like Fromm has. So I didn't really, outside of the experience, I really didn't downgrade the position. And I thought Fromm performed. Eason was struggling the first couple of series of the game against Appalachian State. Fromm came in, led him to all their points. So I don't think it's that big of a deal that everyone else is making out, and certainly not as much as what the initial adjustment was in the power rankings. Key matchup for me here is Georgia's rush offense. Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, nearly 6,000 career rushing yards between the two of them. I think Notre Dame's got issues on the defensive line. They got a couple of true freshmen in the rotation there. They had their worst rush defense in 20 years last year. Better against Temple, but I also saw Temple gashing them a little bit, and I thought the tackling was still a little sloppy for Notre Dame. If it's sloppy against Georgia, Nick Chubb or Sony Michel, and you're missing a tackle, it's not a first down, it's a touchdown. So I'm taking Georgia plus the points, got them +3 in the game of the year markets, got them +6.5 early in the week, and I'll take them +4. I did give them out +4.5 yesterday to my clients, but this one, if Jacob Eason was healthy and I didn't have any issues, this was, you know, game of the month material for me. I think Georgia wins this game outright.
Yeah, I actually had this one going into week one. I had Notre Dame a slight 1.5-point favorite. I made a little bit of an adjustment for Notre Dame last week based on the fact that their number against Temple moved up throughout the week, and then also because Brandon Wimbush looked pretty good at quarterback. So I made a 1.5-point adjustment for Notre Dame. Even then, I still only have this number at 3. So if there's a 4.5 out there, it's certainly something I'm interested in, and kudos to you for grabbing that 6 that's out there, because this feels like one of those overreaction games. And what happens oftentimes is that you get a brand name program that looks pretty good, like a Notre Dame, especially coming out of a 4-8 season, and people immediately go, "Oh, Notre Dame's back." We saw it. I mean, it was so Jekyll and Hyde on Twitter watching that Maryland Texas game. You know, Texas runs a kickback, and everyone goes, "Oh, Texas is back," and all of a sudden, Texas is giving up 51 points by the end of that game, and people go, "Oh shit, Texas isn't back." You get that with these name brand teams that people are paying close attention to. I think there's an element of that here in this game with this Notre Dame line.
There's no question. People want to buy it, but I mean, and they're buying Notre Dame all offseason with that number going up 13 points. Another probably my most proud ticket of this entire season. I hope I have a lot of winners. That's always the intention, but I doubt I'll have a better ticket than Notre Dame -6 against Temple. And let's understand the Georgia Appalachian State. Georgia was not getting, they're getting money this week. They weren't getting money last week. That number closed, went right through a key 14. They were 14.5. That was against my power rankings. My power rankings liked Georgia last week against Appalachian State. The sharper markets were against me, and obviously were anti-Georgia last week. So you should understand that. And I also note this. That was a 31-0 game with 5 minutes left. Those 10 points by Appalachian State were scored very late. So a little bit of a misleading final there. That was when the backups were in for Georgia. So that was 31-0 when the market and Appalachian State was kind of a popular outright upset pick. I thought Georgia far exceeded expectations.
All right, let's go to this game between Stanford and USC. We're just going to cover a lot of big-time programs here, and then there's one more game I want to hit on with Brad. We'll try to do the pick six and then see if we can get an exclusive free pick, although he's kind of although he already mentioned one there with that Georgia-Notre Dame game. But Stanford and USC is a big one here. We've seen some interesting line movement here on this game. BetOnline threw out an awful opener of USC minus 10. That number was gone pretty much immediately with people taking Stanford. Now it's kind of settled down. It's sitting in that 6, 6.5 range. A big time game here. I mean, you know, Stanford definitely coming off of a bye because they played that game out in Australia. USC had some issues with Western Michigan last week. How are you seeing this one, Brad?
Yeah, this is one where I go to the series. Stanford's owned it. They've won outright 7 of the last 9 years. Have they had the better players those 9 years? No, I don't think so. But, I mean, they've had better coaching, and their players have had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And I always think we're getting value in this matchup. USC's kind of, you know, the sexy team with, you know, the passing offense, you know, the name brand quarterback and everything. Stanford's more your meat and potatoes, run the football, play defense. And I got some issues here if you're wanting to back USC, particularly you go back to the Western Michigan game last week, a misleading final. It wasn't an 18-point game, although I wish it was a 20-point game because I had a 19 ticket on USC in the summer markets. I almost got a back door there, our front door cover on the Trojans. But that was a one-possession game from start to finish until the last 3 minutes. And they gave up more than 260 rushing yards. That's not a good look if you're going to go play Stanford and Bryce Love, who I thought had a great game. Now, they played Rice. They look dominant, but it is just Rice. But I like that they had a bye. They're sitting at home being able to dissect the USC-Western Michigan game last week. I took a position on Stanford early in the week, got a 7. It was a rogue number again on Monday. And I'll just tell a lot of people out there it's easier to win betting Sunday and Monday than it is a lot of times later in the week because those 7s are gone. At 6, I'd still have a lean on Stanford. Would not be stunned if they won the game outright. And I'm worried, how is Sam Darnold handling all the expectations? Because last week wasn't a good look. 0 touchdown passes, 2 interceptions. I'm not a big proponent of buying the preseason Heisman favorite, and that wasn't arguably maybe his worst performance since he's been the starter after the Stanford game a year ago.
Where do you think this number closes, Brad? Do you think it closes in that 6, 6.5 range? Do we see a 7? Maybe it's some of the more public books. What do you think the action looks like as we get closer to kickoff? Because believe me, with an 8:30 start time, there's going to be a ton of action on this game Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is Stanford looks like they're a popular underdog pick because, I mean, if you're looking at betting percentages now and there's a lot of places that offer it, you know, Stanford's getting like 70% of tickets. Me as an underdog guy, if there's one thing that I absolutely can't stand is when the public's also backing an underdog. So that would worry me there. I would say there's some sharper guys that actually like SC in the market. So if I had to project it, I think 6 is a real good number that I think – if they go to 7, they're going to get immediate buyback on Stanford. But I think if it goes any lower, I know a lot of people that are not trying to overreact to what they saw from USC in week one, and they're just going to take into consideration that maybe USC overlooked Western Michigan.
All right, one more game I want to touch on in depth, and then we'll start trying to roll through the rest of the segment here. But South Carolina and Missouri, this one opened 4.5 at BetOnline, and I'm really pissed off at myself for not taking it because – would have been a great numbers grab because Missouri is not a favorite on a neutral over South Carolina before what we saw last week. It just would not happen. That was a major overreaction line. Of course, it was just out there at one book, so it was a rogue line. Rest of the market opened 3 or 2.5, which was a much better number. But even still, I mean, this is one of those cases to me where, you know, okay, fine. South Carolina didn't play all that well defensively last week, found a way to win the game. They were a misleading winner. I totally get that. Missouri scored, I don't know, 740 points or whatever they did against Southeast Missouri State. So I understand that too. But, man, this is one of those games early on in the year where you kind of look at it and you start talking to yourself. You know, you kind of start having that monologue where you're like, well, I should take South Carolina, but, I mean, how are they going to stop Missouri? They just couldn't stop NC State. But South Carolina had a lot of buzz before the season. You know, you just keep going back and forth.
Yeah, and I am a little bit. I mean, I really want to take a strong stance with South Carolina. What bothers me is, you know, the old school handicapper in me, a team that had a misleading final and a significant one. Look, the game deserved to be kind of close last week, but when you're outgained by 150 yards, chances are you shouldn't be winning the game. So that would worry me. I'm not a fan of what Barry Odom's doing in Missouri. I like that they were playing defense under Gary Pinkel, and he was a defensive coordinator on many great defenses there. I get it. They're all about offense now, but, man, have they sacrificed a lot. I would say no defense has regressed more in the last 2-3 years than Missouri's defense. What a joke that was in first half, giving up 35 points to a very average FCS school in Missouri State. I know a lot of people fall in love with offense. I'll have to look at it. I can't remember very many SEC games with a 74 spot on a total. It's probably deserved because South Carolina, in my opinion, much better on offense this year. Their defense has question marks. South Carolina, to me, is a better team. It's not ideal getting 2.5 on the road off a misleading win, but I got to lean on South Carolina plus 2.5, and I'll probably have a small bet on the Gamecock.
I appreciate the correction there. It was Missouri State, not Southeast Missouri State, so I do apologize for that. All right, let's get into the pick six segment here, and I'm just going to pick six games rapid-fire fashion, throw them at Brad, and then we'll talk a little bit of NFL here to wrap things up. Let's start Saturday. This is a game that's been moved up. It's now a 10:30 a.m. start time. I'm curious to hear if that affects your handicapping of the game at all. But South Florida's laying 17 on the road against UConn.
Yeah, not a fan of either team. South Florida's really struggled. I mean, down 16-0 early to San Jose State. They give them credit. They rallied back in that one. Down 10-7, maybe in running. South Florida, very early start time. Maybe get off to a slow start. If I have anything, maybe Connecticut first half action. Connecticut got off to a slow start. They're down 20-7. Holy Cross have to come back and win that one. Not a fan of Randy Edsall. Power Rangers got this one at 19. Looks like the number's coming down a little bit. Only in-game live betting action for me. Maybe bite off a little piece of Connecticut plus the points in the first half.
All right, we'll move on here to Buffalo and Army. I like to throw some bad games out there just to get some thoughts because a lot of times those bad games do wind up having more value than the other ones that are out there in the market. Army's laying 16.5 here against a Buffalo team that looked a lot better than people expected them to last week.
Yeah, I mean, if there are a couple players, because that was one game that I actually got a chance to sit down and watch a majority of it. It's tough when so many games are on TV, but I did take quite a long look at the Minnesota-Buffalo game and got – I'm very impressed with their quarterback. He looks the part, 6'7", Tyree Jackson. I thought had a pretty good game. Army playing with revenge here. Keep in mind they lost as two touchdown favorites outright to Buffalo a year ago, even though they outgained them by about 200 yards. So that's a factor in Army's favor. But, boy, at 16.5, Buffalo saw the option last year, and I think they're improved this year. Give me a lean on Buffalo plus the 16.5. I got the number, like, power rated at 14.5.
Here's a game that's had some significant line movement, and it's actually moving against my number, so I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on this game. Wake Forest and Boston College. This one's a pick 'em right now.
Yeah, I mean, I have Boston. I think on a neutral field, obviously, I agree with the market. Wake Forest is the better team. I was a little disappointed in Boston College's performance last week. Blew a 10-point lead. I had a slight ticket on them in that game against Northern Illinois. You know, Wake Forest looked decent against Presbyterian, but it's tough to get a lot out of that one. I don't know if I have a strong stance here, but I'm gonna take the home team in a pick'em game. Two teams that, you know, played last year at the end of the season. Boston College needed a win to get a bowl bid. They got it. Yeah, and, boy, if you ask me pick them, I'm going to take Boston College.
All right, we'll keep moving on down the card here. Lots of games to consider for this week that do stand out for a variety of different reasons. We had a listener question about this game yesterday, and I got to talk about it with Kyle Hunter, but we'll let you give some thoughts here on it. Louisiana Lafayette's a 2-touchdown dog on the road at Tulsa.
Yeah, wasn't a fan of either team's performance in week one. Lafayette actually against an FCS team had to block an extra point attempt. The team was going to tie. They block it, return it for two, and end up winning the game by three, and that happened in the closing moments of the game. Tulsa got run out of the building against Oklahoma State. Market was against Tulsa in that game, and it looks like it's against Tulsa here. I'm not. I'm going to have Tulsa, especially with the number coming down to 14. I get a slight lean on Tulsa. I think the Louisiana Lafayette program is in trouble. They had four consecutive nine-win seasons under Hudspeth. They had a losing season. They got back to a bowl last year, but they got a lot of player suspensions, a little bit of scandal there. I think that program's going in the opposite direction. I look for Tulsa to get a bounce-back win. I trust Philip Montgomery more, and I think when it's all said and done, a late score might put them as about a three-touchdown victor in this one.
One more game to look at in the pick six, Mississippi State laying 8 or 8.5 on the road against Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, I mean, there's a 4.5 number at the win. We'll talk off air. I got a story for you there. I was standing in the line there on Sunday. Boy, I would have loved to have that 4.5 ticket on Mississippi State. Now it's starting to get a little concerning for me. Now, I will say this, a game that was overlooked, Charleston Southern was a team that's a very good FCS team. Mississippi State last week went out and dominated them 49-0. That new defense under Todd Grantham looked pretty darn good. And that was a team that I had question marks because they went with the infusion of JUCO kids on the defensive side of the ball. And if that works out, then they're going to be an undervalued team. Market is on them in this particular game. Although, man, Louisiana Tech, Skip Foltz is one, like his daddy, is one of the best underdog coaches out there. I still have a slight lean on Mississippi State at the -8.5. And with the line climbing, obviously, I'm getting a little bit of scared there. To me, I don't see, you know, Mississippi State blowing them out, obviously. I see a 7-10 point type of victory for them. Would have loved to have the early number. Right now, I'm kind of almost in wait and see mode to see if it continues to climb. Maybe I end up with a Louisiana Tech +10 ticket.
All right. I know you mentioned Georgia as a play that you like. Is there anything else you want to throw to our listeners as an exclusive free pick from you?
Yeah, you know, let's go with a total here because I am a totals guy, and I had a good week one as far as totals go. I'm going to go to the Nebraska-Oregon game, and maybe this is a clear overreaction to what I saw in week one, but if, you know, Nebraska doesn't have an idea on how to stop Arkansas State with their new 3-4 defense under Bob Diaco, how in the hell are they going to stop Oregon, who finally looked the part last week? I know they're playing an FCS school, but the last couple of years they haven't been capable of putting 77 points on anyone. I liked what I saw from them, but I also think Southern Utah moved the football at will, should have scored more points than what they did against Oregon. So I still think there's some concerns for Oregon's defense. I don't see Nebraska stopping Oregon. Anything under 70, and right now it looks like 69, 69.5. I bet it at 68. I'm going over the total. Now, I am a little concerned with, you know, Oregon having to move their practices, and boy, that number jumped up to 14 quick. Now we're starting to see some buyback on Nebraska. That concerns me a little bit, but, man, I see points aplenty in this one. And keep in mind, there's a lot of points missed last year because Mark Helfrich goes for two after every single touchdown and misses like 5 or 6 of them.
Mark Helfrich was terrible. And you know what? It was kind of funny, too, because I was watching the coach's film room during the Ohio State-Indiana game, and every time Mark Helfrich opened his mouth, I kind of cringed a little bit. Like, I would say one out of every 3 points that he made, you know, was a decent one. So I can understand why he's not there in Eugene anymore. All right, let's transition over to the NFL here for a couple minutes, just talk some pro stuff. Overall approach to week one, what are you looking to do? What are you looking for?
I'm looking to you know, play against if there was, you know, a team that's, you know, 4-0 and everyone's buying them in the preseason. I like to play against whatever the preseason showed us. Now, the market's gotten a lot more smarter than what they were 10 or 15 years ago. They're not afraid to play against the what they see. Whatever you see in the preseason, just throw out the window. I thought we would see some money on Oakland. That hasn't showed up as far as the game against Tennessee, particularly with Tennessee having a bad week 3 performance in the preseason. The market's a lot sharper, and I think if you're trying to win in the NFL in week 1 right now and trying to bet, the only way to do it, I think, would be to be in this time of year because the sharps have been betting this stuff all summer long. It's a tight market to begin with. You know, teams like Arizona, who I would have loved to have, you know, a +2.5 ticket against Detroit. Well, now they're laying 2. So obviously clear value loss there. You know, Tennessee, who was getting 1.5, now laying 2.5, clear value loss there. You know, I would say if you want to win week 1, you know, be less aggressive because the numbers are pretty tight. At least I know we haven't seen any of these teams play, but when you got 6 months of betting and particularly sharps betting into it, yeah, I don't see a tremendous amount of value. I'll probably get more involved on some totals than sides at this point. And I'm not afraid of being contrarian like Atlanta. I mean, I can't believe the public's betting them, the Super Bowl loser syndrome. I'll have a Chicago ticket plus 7. And, you know, week one's a little tough. I'm kind of dancing around the question. It's a little tough this time of year on a Thursday to be betting NFL week one.
All right, I do want to talk about the Thursday night game, though, throw a bone to our listeners and remind them that when we have shows late in the week, when there are games or later in the season, when we've got Maction on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, want to make sure that you're trying to get in on the show as quickly as possible. It is very, very important. Catch it on the way home from work on Thursdays or Fridays or whatever the case may be. Let's talk about this Kansas City New England game. This number kind of all over the map out there in the offshore throughout the week. It was 7, 7.5, 8, 8.5, 9. It's 8.5 now at the sharper books. It's 9 at the more public books. Hardly a surprise that the public's looking to back the Patriots here.
Yeah, and it's very tough for me. I'm not going to start off my NFL season by going against the Patriots. After 16-3 against the spread last year, already constantly dealing with, you know, paying a premium on the Patriots because everyone wants to bet them. And so if you'd have bet on every single New England game after they won their first Super Bowl, you'd hit 60% over the last 15 years. So you're not making money going against them, even though I think they're priced a little bit out in this game. But I also don't want to be fading Andy Reid getting more than a touchdown. He's 12-3 against the spread in his career, getting 8 points or more. So I actually took a stance on the under in this one. Got ahead of it. It was 48.5 yesterday. The market seems to agree here. New England's offense gets the headlines. I think people forget that their defense last year was actually number one in the NFL in scoring defense. And both teams' defenses actually, when it comes to you know, they're kind of bend but don't break. They outperform what the statistics say. You know, Kansas City was number 24 in yards allowed last year, but number 7 in scoring defense. And I also look at Kansas City. They rely heavily on, you know, turnover margin, setting up short fields for their offense. Special teams are getting some scores there. I don't think they're going to have that advantage over New England, who also relies on turnover margin and also has a pretty good special teams unit. Tonight, the only thing I'm going to be playing is under the points. I still think there's value. If you can get anything north of 47, under 47.5, 48 is my pick for tonight.
Well, for those that are a little bit upset or maybe a little bit discouraged that we haven't had a ton of NFL here this week, week one to week two in the NFL is much like week one to week two in college football. So I can assure you we will talk a lot more NFL next week with our handicappers because they'll be looking to prey on those overreactions, much like they did in the college market here for this week. But Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over at the website right now, Brad?
Newsletter still available for just $79. It covers you the entire season. And I'm talking not only college, NFL, game write-up, each and every college game write-up for every NFL game. Last two-plus seasons, not too shabby, 57% overall winners, and the sample size, over 300 games, so not too bad there. If you want to check it out before you even decide to purchase it, got past issues up there. Even week one, I was not afraid to put up there. Even though I went 1-4 on my picks, it was not a good look for me. But if you at least want to take a peek and look at all the game write-ups and all the stuff that you'll get each and every week if you're a newsletter subscriber, take a look at it. If you like it, $79, BradPowersSports.com.
And at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Brad, thank you so much for your time, brother. Really appreciate it. I'll talk to you again next week, bud.
You're the man. Look forward to it. Take care. Good luck this weekend.
Great stuff on today's show from Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Always enjoy those segments. Good to talk to him. Him and I could talk college football all day long. One more segment here on this Thursday meeting show. That is with Mr. Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how are you today, man?
Boy, it's great, and I love starting my day listening to you guys. You know, Brad's great. You and Brad together do a great show. Always a good listen.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And also, I'm going to give you preemptive thanks for the burger that I got coming from you.
Yeah, you know, it's a game that if you're going to lose the game, you might as well lose it early and not have to watch it. And that was pretty much the UCLA game, even though they came back and won. It was a game that wasn't going to cover. So to me, a loss is a loss. And it was an ugly one for me and my customers. And certainly that McDonald's burger and can of Schlitz beer is going to taste wonderful for you.
Oh, God. Schlitz. Well, I'll say this. I thank you for not making me endure Jenny Cream Ale. At least you're going with Schlitz. That's a little bit of an upgrade there. But I'll tell you what, Rolf, I'm pretty sure at some point we'll go double or nothing on that bet, and then we'll all wind up paying for our own thing. So, you know, we've got plenty of season left to make these little bar and burger bets. But Speaking of week one in college football, I just talked about it there at the end of that segment with Brad. You know, week one to week two, so significant from an overreaction standpoint in both college football and the NFL. We will focus more on the NFL next week. But I'll ask you the same question I asked Brad at the top of our segment. How did you approach the week one to week two differences in college football? What sorts of adjustments did you make?
You know what? To me, it's the most exciting time. You pretty much said it at the end of your show, you know, getting to the NFL next week, week one to week two. You get a lot of overreactions. One of my favorite things is to look at those teams that got upset as huge favorites or lost to FCS teams time in and time out again. Those teams go on runs. They are so undervalued for the next 3 or 4 weeks. You know, UNLV is a situation where they got as much press as their loss to Howard as they've ever had in their history of college football since Randall Cunningham. So, you know, they're at Idaho. They're getting 9 points. It's a team I certainly lean with. You know, Baylor's another one. Baylor under Matt Rhule. Baylor is going to be a team that's going to be reckoned with. They're going to get their wins down the road. So blow off those losses. Treat them as some extra value because you're going to be getting a few points with those teams. You know, one situation I want to jump back into, you and Brad were talking about some adjustments. And there is one game I actually took off my board because of an adjustment. You guys talked about it with UConn and South Florida. I was looking to use the over in this game. You know, Connecticut is a team that is going up-tempo with Randy Edsall. And last week they struggled against Holy Cross. They were actually down. They started a new quarterback last week. But for UConn fans or those looking to back them, they brought in Brian Sheriffs again. He led him to 3 second-half touchdowns. He's a guy who had 12 starts for him and had been their starter but lost his job. With him back in the fold for UConn, I actually like them and upgraded him a few points in my power ratings. However, with the early time and the game being moved up so late in the week, it's a game that with the total I'm going to pass on it instead of using the over with those two teams both pressing the tempo.
I want to ask you about a game. It's probably best here sometimes to just use specific games as examples of this rather than talk about, you know, some of these concepts. And you get a little bit more, you know, tangibility when you use an actual game. Like East Carolina and West Virginia, for example. This number opened 19.5. It's now sitting 24. Look, East Carolina got dominated by James Madison. James Madison also won the FCS championship game last year. They're basically like a lower level or like a – they're like a high group of five type of team from a power rating standpoint, something that Brian Leonard talked about a little bit on yesterday's show. And people are just punting East Carolina immediately for losing to an FCS team. But James Madison would be favored over quite a few FBS teams. So, well, while I'm not saying I'm going to back the Pirates, but, I mean, still, that's a pretty big move.
It is, and James Madison was the favorite in that game. So UNLV lost as a 45-point favorite. East Carolina lost as a home dog. That's not that big of a deal. They'd be a home dog to most teams in the American Conference. James Madison was the road favorite, so that's hard for a lot of people to put their fingers around. So, you know, that loss is a little different. You know, East Carolina is bad, but, again, you've got a situation there where – you have a team that looked bad, same situation, lost in week one, and I completely agree. It's a game that because you look so bad, now is the time to make adjustments. You're never as bad as your last game, and you're never as good as your last game.
Well, I mean, that's a number that I had 18 going into week one. I made a 3-point adjustment on East Carolina because, you know, I mean, hey, they did lose at home to an FCS team. As good as James Madison is, if they lose that game 24-21 or something, that's fine. They lost by 20 points and got their asses kicked in the box score. So, of course, I'm going to adjust that. But then my number is 21 here against West Virginia. So it moves towards my number. Well, it's right on through my number. Again, not to say I'm going to have a Pirates ticket because you look that bad. Odds are things aren't going to change that much in 1 week. But still, that's one of those overreaction types of situations that you want to be looking for. Another one with a line move this week is Cincinnati and Michigan, where Cincinnati played pretty poorly against Austin Peay, an Austin Peay team that hasn't won since, I don't know, the Bush administration. And, you know, it's one of those situations here where all of a sudden Michigan's a 35-point favorite in this game. Again, not to say I'm going to step in front of the steam by any means, But another one of those situations where you get that significant week one overreaction because a team played an FCS foe.
Well, jumping back to the West Virginia East Carolina game, you know, one reason that I actually adjusted my power ratings 2 points is that West Virginia played Sunday night in a neutral setting, and now they're playing at noon on Saturday. You know, college teams don't adjust like the NFL and can make a one-week adjustment with that. It's difficult for those teams to get home late Sunday night, deal with school on Monday, and then, again, you're taking off Monday, and Tuesday's a walkthrough day, and you're back to action Saturday morning early. So a short week in college, there's only a few times you get to take advantage of that. This is one of them. You know, the other game, I'm on Cincinnati as well. Michigan looked great, but let's not forget Florida was without their top wide receiver, Callaway, without their running back, 10 wide receivers. They didn't know which quarterback they were going to play, and heck, any of the three could have flipped a coin and been as bad as the others. So Michigan is certainly a situation where I'm looking to fade them this week as well.
So are there any other teams that you made significant adjustments for? I know you mentioned making an adjustment for East Carolina. I mean, obviously you kind of had to, and then, you know, I'm sure there were some other teams as well. What were some of the biggest adjustments, whether up or down, that you made?
You know, a couple of them, Purdue was one of them. You know, I was on Purdue against Louisville, and the score doesn't mean as much to me as the line of scrimmage does and the enthusiasm. You know, Purdue's been a team that's had a handful of wins, five or less wins, for so many years. There was genuine excitement under Jeff Brohm. You know, and he went back and forth with a couple quarterbacks. I think they finally settled. But watching kids finally grasp the enjoyment of football is something that is priceless. And I don't mean to be cliche on that, but, you know, making tackles and being excited and being down seven and knowing you're not out of the game, that there's a different look in their eyes. So Purdue is probably the team that I upgraded the most, as I did with Western Michigan. You know, sometimes you can lose to a USC by 7 points and you were never in the game. Western Michigan ran that ball between the tackles, and they moved the ball between the tackles, and it was not gimmicky. It was not, you know, we got a flea flicker. We won the turnover battle. We returned a punt for a touchdown. It was mano a mano, line them up on the line. Our guys are going to block your guys, and we're going to make holes for our running backs. And that's exactly what they did. That's part of the reason I like Stanford this week, is because, you know, Western Michigan played Stanford football. Stanford learned so much from that game, where on the flip side, USC played Stanford and learned nothing of Stanford's mauling of Rice, and they didn't have to show anything that they might have be showing in this week's game, jumping about, to a game that we're not talking about, but just to give you some reference in that game.
You know, I like the Western Michigan point a lot, because I was looking at the hire of Tim Lester, who was a quarterback at Western Michigan, who's been a quarterback's coach, and everybody knows that the strength of this Western Michigan team is running the football, especially without Zach Terrell, who, you know, only threw 3 or 4 interceptions last year, whatever it was, 4-year starter at quarterback. So one of my biggest concerns coming into the season about Western Michigan was, is this new head coach going to force throwing the football? Because he's a quarterback. He's got a quarterback's mindset. He's going to want to throw the football here at some point. But will it be week one? Will it be week two? How quickly is he going to do that? And then you look at what happened in this game with Western Michigan. Their quarterback play was atrocious. 11 of 22 for 67 yards, no touchdowns and a pick. But they were running the football. They stuck with the run. That's important to me when you get a new head coach, because a lot of times, you know, you're looking for a coach to put his players in the best position to succeed. Western Michigan was put into a position to succeed in that game, did succeed in that game for the most part, covered the number comfortably. You know, we're right in that game after three quarters. And that is how you get a team upgraded. You know, maybe I didn't make an adjustment to my power ratings as of yet because of what happened with the line move in that game, but I will be evaluating and viewing Western Michigan differently because I know that the coach is going to play to what his team's strengths are.
Well, you're going to know Saturday. I mean, because, you know, while Michigan State might have been a 3-win team last year, they're probably the best 3-win team in all of football, and I would not want to play against them. So we'll see if Western Michigan can run on Michigan State this week. And they do, then, hey, you know, Toledo, watch out in the MAC. It's not as easy a run as some of us might have thought. So we'll wait and see what happens in that game.
Last thing I want to ask you about here, and then we'll look at some specific games, is – in terms of making adjustments to your power ratings, you know, we've kind of had this discussion throughout the week in terms of using the closing line to make adjustments, looking at performance, looking at box score study, all that type of thing. What factors into your formula for making adjustments?
Well, you know, my power ratings are as fluid as any, and I don't even publish mine each week because they vary so much. You know, we talked about last week some instances where my power rating on a game may change by up to 7 points depending on situation, rest, buys, matchups, injuries. So, you know, I think it's an injustice to print a power rating number because I could have a power rating number that's right on the line but have a four-star, which is a very strong play for me, on a team in that game. So, you know, my power ratings are just there as a reference for me to get a judge. If I'm looking at a game and watching a game, I don't worry about what the score or the line was. My adjustment is made simply by the eye test. If I'm not watching a game, I then go back, I look at what the score was, I look at the line was, and I look at the stats. I look if there were any cheap touchdowns. I look especially at fourth quarter touchdowns. You know, fourth quarter touchdowns mean very little to me. If a team was overmatched, you know, let's say Indiana and Ohio State's a great example. You know, Indiana's winning at halftime, third quarter's close, Ohio State makes their adjustments. Well, very few teams, you know, sans Alabama, has the depth Ohio State has that can keep running that pace in the third and fourth quarter. So in my eyes, although Indiana didn't cover, they still got upgraded in my power ratings because the competition they played, they're not going to face anyone that deep the rest of the year, and therefore those players on that team will be able to play further into the game than they did against the Buckeyes at 100% level.
Let me play devil's advocate and press you a little bit on a point that you just made there, that you adjust based on the eye test to a game that you watched. Aren't you worried about, you know, recency bias or a little bit of overreaction?
Well, you know, I've been doing it a long time. So, yes, there may be an overreaction, but, you know, the overreactions settle themselves in a week. So if I'm watching a game, I feel comfortable enough to put what I saw on that team up against anyone. That's how confident I am when it gets to college football, watching and evaluating teams. So I'm not afraid to move a team up and move them right back down the next week if I'm wrong. But, you know, you're basing your handicapping on you having confidence on your abilities, and I certainly do. So I move them on the eye test. If I'm wrong, I'll change it. If I'm right, then kudos, and we probably had a winner that week.
No, I mean, that's fair. I didn't want to question your process or belittle the way that you go about things. It's just, it was a question that, you know, I felt merited asking. And, you know, like you said, you have done this for a long time. You have watched football for a very long time. And also, too, I think that you have the ability to put into perspective, even if a team looks really, really good, it's not like you're going to move them 6 or 7 points. If a team looks really good, you're going to keep that in perspective and probably move them 2 or 3, maybe 4 at the most, right?
4 is my highest moves, you know, and okay. I never move anyone more than 4. And I start my power ratings out as I like starting my top team out at exactly 100 points. That gives me a perspective on the end of the year. So even if someone moved up to 111 or 112 the previous year and they're the best team, you know, let's say Alabama, I still adjust everyone back to where my top guy is 100. That gives me a gauge that this team was the best team in football at the start of the year. Then halfway through the year, I could see where that adjustment is to 100. I could see what teams approached 100, what teams went over 100. And then I have that running idea in my head the whole time of where my top caliber team was and where they are later in the year.
All right, let's look at some specific games here and kind of apply these concepts a little bit. TCU and Arkansas, it's a 3:30 kickoff game, 363, 364 on the board. I'm very happy to see this line move. I mean, for one thing, I got in on an early number at TCU plus 1.5. But the other thing is that TCU has been a top 20, top 15 team in my power ratings with every adjustment I've made. And right now they're sitting there 14th. Arkansas for me is the 31st team in my power ratings. So yes, I do have TCU favored in this spot. I'm happy to see the number move that way. But this is a very significant move where now we're seeing 3 with extra juice. There's also a 3.5 that has popped out there. With TCU, a very big road favorite, what are your thoughts on this game?
You know, this is a game that really steamed, and I don't know why, and Brad and I talked about this a couple days ago, you know, or it could have been Brian Leonard last night, why TCU moved so much. And, you know, I didn't have an answer. And a lot of times, you know, there's steam groups that might hit it or play it, but this moved several times. And, you know, it's a game I really don't have an answer. You know, Arkansas 5-2 at home last year. You know, they were 2-2 as a home dog last year. They weren't a home dog the previous year. But I do like TCU. I like Gary Patterson. I like him coming off a losing year. 17 returning starters. I'm a fan of Kenny Hill. You know, last year he did have a problem with picks. I think he threw a dozen picks, maybe 13 picks. And that really caused him to struggle. But TCU's defense is really what I think is the most improved unit on the field. Top three tacklers back, five of the top six or six of the top seven back for them. And I'm a fan of TCU. Now that it's over three, though, I will not be on this game.
So what do you think happens with this game as we get closer to kickoff? I mean, ultimately, you know, TCU is a name brand program because of what they did in the Mountain West Conference, because of what Gary Patterson did to put them on the national landscape. But ultimately, this is still a Big 12 versus SEC game. So do you think the public piles on? Do you think the public, you know, plays Arkansas at the plus three, maybe brings this down to three flat, something like that? Where do you think this line goes?
Yeah, I think it's set where it is at this point. You know, I don't think Arkansas is not a huge public team. You know, Bielema has run his course. He's in his fifth year there. And congratulations. He's one of the coaches we used to talk to all the time. He now has fatherhood in his setting. So a lot less sleep for him. But, you know, TCU is a team that I know can win on the road. Arkansas does not have a huge home edge where, you know, I rate them as like a normal SEC team at home. Arkansas pulls the upset doesn't surprise me, but it's a game that I will just learn from it. You know, while I won't have a play on the game, there's still a lot you learn from each game, and this is one of those for me.
So does this move, you know, point you in the direction to move TCU up? I mean, like you said, you and Brian or Brad, whoever you were talking to earlier in the week, you guys didn't really understand the move, which would imply to me that maybe you had this number, Arkansas one, Arkansas pick, TCU minus one, something like that. Does this inspire you to start looking at a move, or do you just prefer to see how the game plays out first?
Oh, I won't move anything until after the game's played. A line move doesn't worry me at all. You know, we're talking 2 weeks of football. We're talking Arkansas played Florida A&M. We're talking TCU off a blowout, you know, off a blowout win against an FCS opponent. So, you know, a line move doesn't justify any power rating change. And I tend to look back at what the number was prior to the steam move before I make any moves. So, you know, a line move's a line move. Don't let that change the way you're thinking about a team, because it's just a couple people betting. You know, a lot of times people think, well, a steam play is that, you know, some person bet the same game at every casino, but this game being week two, being no NFL action, you know, a group could have bet a few thousand dollars, $10,000 on a game, and other casinos just made the move. You got a lot of casino guys that look on the Don Best screen, just like a lot of customers do. And if a casino moves a point or two, they're going to move as well, because they don't want to be exposed in a game where they don't have a lot of action. Some casinos aren't afraid to take a lot of action on one team and be one-sided, but most of the casinos are corporate-run businesses where if they don't have a lot of Arkansas money and a TCU team line is moving, they don't want to be the one that's exposed to have $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 on one side and no money on the other side. So they just move their line in accordance with the other casinos to not be the only one out there with a low number.
There are a lot of really good games here in week two. I talked about Oklahoma, Ohio State, Georgia, Notre Dame, Stanford, USC in the previous segment with Brad. But let's talk Auburn and Clemson here. Another real good game coming up this weekend. This one's sitting in that dead zone between 4 and 6. You got some fives out there. Five's kind of the prevailing number. The sharper books, Bookmaker and DSI sitting 4.5. BetOnline sitting 5.5. Bovada sitting 6. So I'll give you some kind of idea on where the public kind of lines up with this game. But real interesting one here. You know, you got Auburn with a new quarterback, Clemson with a new quarterback. Is this just too high variance of a game for you to play?
No, I'm a big Auburn fan in this game. And, you know, while Jason Stidham's a new quarterback to Auburn, you know, he did make three starts at Baylor. He was in the Baylor program a few years. He threw for 1,200 yards, 69% completions, a 12-2 ratio. So being new is one thing. Stidham played on the road in Big 12 games and did well. So for me, it's a huge advantage to Auburn. I'm going to play with a more veteran quarterback. And while Clemson has the best D-line in the country in my books and has a top five defense, you know, I think they have a lot of growth too. And I think Auburn is an offense that last week didn't play Cameron Pettaway. He's back in the lineup. Didn't play one of their wide receivers. There was some issue with him. He's back in the lineup. I'm an Auburn fan. I'm one of those guys that think Auburn, when they host Alabama on November 25th, probably be around a 5-7 point home dog and can clearly pull that upset and is one of my national champion dark horses. So I'll take the points with a defensive team. I also like the under in this game with a lower scoring game. You know, last week was pretty much, you know, the epitome of that game. 19-13 Clemson. Clemson was the favorite, but a lower scoring game. The only issue I do have is that, you know, from our friend Mark Lawrence, you know, he has a couple revenge angles on this situation. And Auburn is only 1-6 on the road with revenge. So they've not had that fight to be able to beat the team that beat them the year before when they're on the road. I'm not going to worry about it this time. I'm just pointing out one negative in the game. But I am a Tigers fan. Low scoring game, field goal game. Gladly take the points with the defense and the better quarterback.
This one in my power ratings, I've got 5.5. So I pretty much have it right there in that range. So I won't have any interest in it. I know that we talk a lot about power ratings here on the show, and we talk about power ratings plays and numbers plays and all that. But also you have to keep in mind that a lot of times what most of us do that do power ratings is simply use those as a guide to start looking at games and start evaluating where these lines may go. If we've got a number that's higher in our power ratings, a lot of times we have the confidence to think that the number is going to go higher, going to move towards our number. In a spot like this, you talked about Clemson having the best defensive line in the country as far as you're concerned. Well, I'll circle back to that Ohio State-Indiana game. Ohio State, to me, has the best or the second best defensive line in the country. You could probably pick nits all day about them and Clemson. But what Indiana did early in that game, what Mike DeBoer's game plan was he got the ball out very early, through back shoulder throws to his wide receivers, because that's going to keep the defensive line from getting pressure. It's going to keep the defensive line from getting in the backfield. So when you look at a game like this, your number may be on point, and I'm not saying I'm going to play Auburn, but I'm just using this as an example. Your number may be on point, but you start thinking about the X's and O's of this game. If Clemson's strength on defense is the defensive line, and Auburn's going to run outside the tackles, run sideline to sideline, tire those guys out, that neutralizes some of Clemson's strength in this game. So that has to be a factor for you as you're handicapping the game.
And there's SEC speed. Now, Clemson has that SEC speed. Let me jump back and correct myself on one statement. Clemson has the best starting defensive line. Ohio State by far has the best defensive line unit. When you have Joey Bosa, when you have Bosa as your backup, who would probably start on every other team but Clemson, as a unit, Ohio State has the better unit. They rotate a lot of guys. Clemson, the best starting defensive four as a group. So, again, we are nitpicking on that. But, you know, the thing that I do like about Auburn is the speed. Their wideouts have a lot of speed. And even their linebackers have a lot of speed for Auburn. They are one of the quickest teams out there from top to bottom. And, you know, speed can win college football games. And it's a situation where I agree with you. The offense that they run, the quick throws that we saw hurt Ohio State is exactly how you're going to beat Clemson.
All right, let's move to a really interesting game here. Late game, this one, 397, 398 on the board, 10:30 Eastern time kickoff between Houston and Arizona. This is probably one of the toughest games to handicap out there on the board. It opened pick 'em. It's now Houston -1, -1.5. So the Cougars getting a little bit of love in this spot. Now, Arizona decimated Northern Arizona in their first game. They're supposed to do that. That's not a big surprise. Houston had its game against UTSA canceled last week. So the Cougars haven't played anybody. They've got a new head coach in Major Applewhite, who was the offensive coordinator last year. So not a whole lot should change offensively. But there's a lot to unpack about this game with a line that's basically sitting you know, where you're at. You just need to pick the winner.
You know, I'm going to I'm not going to have a play on this. And I'm going to go back and just talk through my thoughts on this game. On Sunday, when Major Applewhite had their meeting and the game had been canceled, they let all their players not be there Friday, Saturday, deal with whatever they had to deal. And he asked the players, who needs anything? Don't be shy if anything happened. There were about a dozen players on Houston whose families were directly influenced by the hurricane, having their house flooded, property damaged, so on and so forth. And I think having the structure is a positive for a team and can be a rallying point. But here's my issue with Houston. If you have structure with an experienced coaching staff and you have a home game, I would be all over Houston to be rallying as a win, as an important tool to recover from the hurricane. But you have a brand new coaching staff who now is going through a week of befuddled practices and then going having to go on the road, and you have a Pac-12 Power 5 team, which is a home dog to a Group of 5 team. I think it changes the scenario that gives Arizona the motivation in this game. So, you know, we all remember the Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. And what the Saints, that Monday night game meant to them, that home game that was just electric. I'm going to be on the Houston Texans at home in that situation with J.J. Watt raising that money. It's an NFL game we're not going to talk about, but I'm just going to put that comparison over, and I'm going to play on the Houston Texans in that role, but I'm not going to play on the Houston Cougars in this role because they're on the road with a new coaching staff.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, it can be really tough as well for, you know, I mean, still, and a lot of our listeners, some of them may even still be this age, but a lot of us can remember back, you know, to our college days where there's just a lot going on. You got classes, you got relationships, you know, you're a football player, so you got practice. Obviously, a lot of us can't relate to that. You know, there's so much going on. And then you have to put this big, tragic, catastrophic event into perspective where, like you just said, there were families affected by this that had their houses flooded. And, you know, I know the players are out doing relief efforts and things like that as well. You know, it's tough as a kid who's, you know, starting to learn, starting to grow up, to then all of a sudden flip the focus back to football. You know, that is a very challenging thing to do. So, you know, I mean, it's never fun to talk about these types of situations. There's certainly no malicious intent ever meant when we talk about situations like this, but situational handicapping is a significant thing. It is a significant tool. And, you know, like you said, I think that, you know, the way that you broke down that game does make a lot of sense there. Let's flip over to the NFL. I know you mentioned already that you do like Houston, so I think that's a pretty good segue to talking about the professionals. Overall, Ralph, what is your approach to week one? I mean, these lines have been up for a long time. We're seeing waves of movement now once again as limits have gotten higher. How do you approach this week in the NFL?
Well, we talked a few shows back, and the most important thing for me going into the NFL season is to set my power rating numbers prior to the preseason and only change them if there was an injury or a trade. You know, you had the Browns at 4-0. Well, does that mean they're going to be Pittsburgh opening day? No. You know, you had Seattle 4-0. Well, you know, he's the best head coach out there in preseason, so that doesn't mean much. Oakland 0-4. You know, is that part of the reason that, you know, Tennessee flipped favorite? You know, perhaps people did overreact to the Raiders. So, you know, the biggest thing for me is have your numbers prior to the preseason. It's a little late to say that for all those new listeners, but something to move towards for next year. And don't over-adjust. You know, we saw, you know, the Ezekiel Elliott the soap opera. Pretty much, you know, back, forth, changing lines. Well, in the long run, you know, the best running back, at least last year, was a point and a half for a team that needs him as much as anyone. So, you know, granted, Miami's a different situation with Tannehill getting hurt, but, you know, Cutler's in there now. So don't overreact. Have your numbers. Make slight adjustments as the preseason progresses with injuries or perhaps, you know, a team is practicing and playing as well, but don't overreact to what you saw. So, you know, going into that, you know, we've talked about the Tennessee and Oakland game a few times. You know, that's a game where, you know, I think the line is right now. So if I'm a Tennessee fan, you know, this is a game that I lean Tennessee, but I would not play. It does not bother me that they're a favorite. During the preseason, I had Tennessee, prior to the preseason, I had Tennessee as a 3-point favorite. So if I was not able to play them as a dog when the line opened and they're still 2 and your numbers are there, my advice is play that game. Don't worry about a line move if you couldn't play it. Every person is not going to get the best line on every game. If there's a line on a game, it's still within your range and your value that you want to play it. Just because it moved, it doesn't matter. If there's value at the game with your line, play the game, cash the ticket. If the line moved and you don't have the best line, so what? Very few people get the best line in Vegas. One person, in fact, one person gets the best line and it moves a point or point and a half for those game of the year lines. Two people get the best 2 lines and then it's moved 3 points. Two people betting should not affect your game.
All right, let's look at a couple of games here and talk about some of these concepts. And the first one I want to touch on is Baltimore and Cincinnati. Cincinnati, field goal favorite. That's generally what we tend to see here when Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh play each other in the AFC North. You know, these are games that have historically been pretty close. These three teams have kind of done a little bit of a musical chairs format at the top of this division with Cleveland, of course, bringing up the rear pretty much year after year. But this is a really interesting game because obviously the big story, the big dark cloud hanging over this game is the status of Joe Flacco and the fact that he didn't play in the preseason. You know, doesn't really have that rapport with his team. Are you surprised to see this line just sitting there at 3?
Very much so. And again, we're going back to something, you know, I talked about on the previous show. I'm a big Cincinnati fan. I bet the Bengals over the win total. I bet the Bengals to win the AFC North. I bet the Bengals as a long shot as the AFC champions. So, you know, I think the Bengals are a team that won 33 games in 2013, 14, and 15, and last year they went 6-9-1. One bad year does not take me off a team. In fact, it excites the heck out of me to come back this following year. You know, on the flip side, not only has Flacco only practiced the past week, so has wide receiver Perriman and their running back. So you've got three major players for Baltimore who've only practiced a week. The red-hot Cincinnati team that's covered 5 of 7 against Baltimore, has covered 6 of the last 8 at home, is sitting at home ready to play, know that they're home again next week. And, again, Baltimore's a team that went 4-0 in the preseason. I was on Baltimore all 4 weeks during the preseason. They went 4-0 straight up in ATS. Their defense looked incredible, but this is one where I'm actually getting value playing against a team that performed so well in the preseason by playing against Baltimore.
You know, and another thing about it, too, and I was just reading this as you were talking, that the Baltimore offensive line, the starting offensive line, hasn't even played together in a preseason game because they've had guys that have been in and out. And also, there's a big headline over on ESPN.com, if you look over on the Baltimore Ravens page, from their starting guard, Marshall Yanda, that says, Ravens more committed than ever to running the ball. So it is very clear to me here that the game plan is to ease Joe Flacco into this thing. And when you have a situation like that where you're going to ease him in, I mean, maybe it's coach speak. Maybe they're lying. Maybe they're putting up a smoke screen here. But to me, it limits your playbook, and Cincinnati knows that, and Cincinnati should be able to adjust to the fact that Baltimore does intend to run more, gives them a chance to maybe do some single coverage on the outside, figure that Flacco doesn't have that rapport, doesn't have that timing with his wide receivers just yet. It is very surprising to me that this line is only sitting there at 3, and truthfully, I mean, it really hasn't moved a whole lot at all. I mean, even when you go back to the summer, there wasn't really a significant amount of movement on this game. I'm surprised at that given the Joe Flacco situation. So it is one of those spots where maybe you can psych yourself out a little bit and sort of overthink it.
Well, you know, it's a boring game. You know, Pittsburgh now with their offense last year has got to be a little exciting, but the AFC North is boring. You know, Cleveland's nothing. Cincinnati, Baltimore, you know what you're getting. You're going to get, you know, 2017 games. So I think this is just an under-the-radar game. I think this is a game that, you know, maybe people are thinking, well, you know, Tom Brady did it last year, didn't play 4 weeks and, you know, came back and did great. But Brady was also healthy and practiced. He was just suspended. It wasn't that he was hurt and couldn't practice. Not playing in the preseason doesn't affect me. Not practicing with the ones in the preseason is the reason to play against Baltimore.
One more game I want to touch on here specifically, and that's between Atlanta and Chicago. The Falcons laying 6.5 or 7 on the road at Soldier Field. And, you know, it certainly wasn't a great preseason for the Bears by any means. I mean, you know, they went 2-2, so that's good for them, but they wound up with a quarterback controversy. You know, they have some other things going on there. But at the same time, you know, you had a very long season for the Falcons last year, going all the way to the Super Bowl. Obviously, we all know how they lost that Super Bowl. So what's your approach for a game like this in week one, where you've got a team that everyone pretty much agrees is going to be pretty good in Atlanta against a team that the consensus opinion is Chicago's not going to be very good? You know, does that factor into your handicapping here?
If I had one bet to make in this game, I'd say give me Chicago. If I had two bets to make, I'd say give me Chicago twice. If I had three bets, I'd say give me Chicago three times. You know, you're looking at you know, people are talking about Glenn and Trubisky, who should get the quarterback job. It doesn't matter to me. You're still an NFL team. And top to bottom NFL, remember, people overreact. We get into the college game. This is the second week in college. Well, I would say from top to bottom, the NFL is like top to bottom from the SEC West. One division of football, you know, all those teams are that close. Maybe not the Jets this year, but we'll see what happens. You know, Chicago was a team that went 3-13 last year, but they outgained their foes. That puts them at like an 8-8 team. So look at what the team did on the field. Look at what the team can do. There's still NFL talent on that team. You know, you've got Atlanta, who last year opened up against Oakland, who was a 4-point dog. And because of what they've done recently, they're now a 7-point favorite. Super Bowl losers, when they start their season on the road, 2-15 ATS the last 17 times it's occurred. All that pressure, all that offseason, can we make it back? Now you're going on the road to face a team that only won 3 games. Well, you know, do we really care about that game? Well, it's the NFL. Yes, you care. But, you know, in the long run, those are great situations. You know, I did a stat for the Browns-Steelers game. In the last, you know, and I don't have it in front of me, and I apologize, but in the last 12 or 14 years, there have only been a handful, under 10 instances, where there's been a week one road favorite of 7 points or more. So this not only is inflated, this is like historically inflated with Atlanta. So I'm clearly going to be a one to fade them. They were, you know, they were 3-0 as a road favorite last year. But again, that was early in the year when they weren't laying the points. And oh yeah, by the way, Atlanta has Green Bay on deck. I think they might be peeking ahead to that game as well at home.
No, I think that's an excellent point. And as you mentioned, I did want to fact check, not that I didn't believe you, but the Bears did outgain their opponents last year, as you mentioned, but they were minus 20 in turnover margin. They were minus 9 in fumbles alone. You talk about fumble luck, something that, you know, generally does tend to kind of regress to the mean a little bit. They lost 12 fumbles. They only recovered 3 of them, only had 8 interceptions against 19 picks. So, you know, I mean, if you're sitting there and you're John Fox, and let's be honest here too, that the Chicago Bears last year had 14 turnovers in the last 3 games of the season. They were minus 13 in turnover margin in the last 3 games of the season. So people are going to remember stuff like that. People are going to remember just how bad the Bears were late in the year. I mean, after their bye week, 4 turnovers, 1-2-1-0-4-5-5. So again, this is a team that got worse as the season went along, and you get some recency bias in the equation when you get a situation like that. So, I do think that's an interesting point, and also the point that you made about Atlanta taking on Green Bay, because, you know, you want to see how you stack up against the best of the best. You know, you saw it last year in the playoffs with Atlanta, how they stacked up against the best of the best, and then had that 28-3 lead over New England. So they know they can play with anybody. And they probably figure, hey, we can beat the Bears. The Bears are bad. So, hey, overlooking opponents is a big thing in the NFL. We think that it doesn't happen because these guys are professionals and this and that, but it absolutely does. So I think that's a really strong handicap there by you. Anything else you want to mention for the NFL card this week?
You know, again, I'm going to call it the big ugly. And I'm a guy who's on the Cleveland Browns, you know, again, at 9.5, it's as ugly as it gets. You're starting a rookie quarterback. You've got the Steelers who are probably the second AFC, you know, leader for the Super Bowl behind New England. But I think same situation. It's a lower scoring game. You have a division rival. You have players that practiced well. Obviously, Cleveland has cleaned out their closets, you know. And when you have an all-pro cornerback going to the opposing team and you're playing them week one, that's a game I'm not as strong on. But home dogs week one of this high of a number, I can only take them or not play the game. So I would not play into that situation, even if I get scared away from Cleveland with what's happened recently with Miles Garrett getting hurt, not playing, with trading the cornerback, with jettisoning, you know, other players that were starters on the team. I would not play into those big road favorites if I'm not playing the home dog.
A lot of good thoughts here on today's show from Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, what's going on over at the website right now?
You know, the newsletter went up last week. We started a newsletter called Gridiron Guide at WagerTalk.com. You just go to the news and then the NFL section. I'll have it up on Sundays. So when you're handicapping next weekend's games, you have the logs for every team straight up against the spread and over-unders. You have the yardage for each team, the yardage difference, team and opponent, turnovers, team and opponent, year-to-date averages, rush yards, pass yards, team and opponent, 10 categories for ATS, 10 categories for over-unders, how teams do off a straight-up win, how they do off a straight-up loss. It's free every week, wagertalk.com, NFL news. It'll be up Sunday by 1 p.m. Eastern, and it's one page per matchup. Make sure you look at it before you're looking at next week's college football games.
And you can follow Ralph on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Ralph Michaels, thank you so much for your time, man. We really, really appreciate it. I'll talk to you again next week.
Talk to you next Thursday, Adam.
Strong show here today. Really, really strong show. Lots of good stuff, different perspectives, covered a wide range of games. Good to get some more NFL insight here on the show as well. And like I said, for those that are bigger into the NFL than college, it's just a simple fact that right now college offers a lot more opportunities. And that's what this show is about, is looking for opportunities to educate and inform our listeners and help them build up their bankrolls. When we get into the NFL week two, week three, that's where we get more opportunities in the NFL. You know, these numbers have been out there for a long time. Limits are higher over the summer in the NFL than they are in college. Limits obviously now very big for the NFL, but these are still numbers that have been up for a long time. Positions have been announced. Values have been taken out of some of these games. So again, it's not by design. We're not ignoring the NFL because we hate it. Well, it is by design. It's not like we're ignoring the NFL because we hate it or something like that. It's just that right now, the opportunities for this week were more on the college side than the NFL side. And we will talk more NFL on next week's show. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment that I will chat about with Sports Cheetah. I'm doing our Bang the Book podcast entry on my own. So he's there to help facilitate my discussion, facilitate my monologue that I'll be having with myself there. I'll also talk about some strategy elements and maybe some of the things that he's looking at as well. And then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with the odds report. No live show tomorrow. Both of these segments pre-recorded, so I'll cut together the intro and the exit for the week. So I'll just post that as early as I can on Friday, and that'll wrap up our week. So that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.